ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Brought to you by Zadok Jewelers, KFNC and KFNC HD2, Mont Bellevue, Houston.
Vasquez beaten away by Buffon, and then Ronaldo! What a goal by Cristiano Ronaldo!
Messi to the near post! Messi to the net!
Mamma mia! Lionel! Ronel Kiyonko now. Here's a Honduran. He'll whip it in back to the far post. Elise! Albert Elise! La Pantanita! It's a Honduran connection!
This is Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. DaspitLaw.com. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, a big thank you to John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm, our presenting sponsors. DaspitLaw.com. They get us on the air. What a big day today in the Champions League. Election night in America, and I am here to give you the great escape. Panther sighting in Boa Vista. The most intriguing roster, maybe, in U.S. soccer history, based on those playing in Europe. Youth diversity of clubs, leagues. A real stretch, though, when it comes on to experience. We'll talk about Greg Berhalter's roster of the United States national team ahead of games against Wales and Panama. Be excited, but be realistic. Diego Maradona apparently is undergoing surgery outside of Buenos Aires. This being reported by family member Diego Lopez Maradona. You may remember him for his time playing for the local Houston Hotshots. Had a big left foot. Tremendous guy, Diego Lopez Maradona, who himself beat cancer. But Diego Maradona, the Argentine legend, apparently undergoing surgery. Got a number of great guests tonight. Tom Clare, the noted author. He's going to come on the show tonight to talk about this big problem of dementia that has affected some of the legendary soccer players in Europe, including this past week we lost the legendary Nobby Stiles. And why not is being done enough? Why not enough is being done for these legends? And remember, these guys did not make the money that players are making today. Nobby Stiles was a 66 World Cup winner. He won the European Cup with Manchester United. Absolute legend. Brian Sciarretta, with his tracking and knowledge, breaks down and talks about the reality of the U.S. roster, again announced by Greg Berhalter. Adam Lundqvist will join us on this show tonight. This will be a tough interview because it was a tough season. But I really appreciate Adam stepping up and coming on the show. This is going to be an interview that's going to get into some real questioning with Adam Lundqvist on this season, some of the issues that have plagued the Dynamo, and where the future is. Also, Tom Marshall of ESPN FC and tremendous writer who covers the Mexican national team, Liga MX, talks a lot about Major League Soccer as well. We'll talk to Tom on a number of topics, including who might be some of the Mexican national stars that will continue to come over and play in Major League Soccer. We got a couple of ideas. I want to run them by Tom and see what he thinks. Today, Lokomotiv Moscow, a 1-1 draw with Atletico Madrid in the Champions League. Shakhtar Donetsk. How about this? Now, remember, in Group B, they've beaten Real Madrid. They get smacked by Mönchengladbach today, 6-0, in Kiev. Red Bull Salzburg of Austria and U.S. coach Jesse Marsh, most successful coach when it comes to getting into the Champions League ever for an American, 6-2 beatdown from Bayern Munich. It was 2-2 at one point. Group B at the Estadio Alfredo Di Stefano, which is the secondary stadium for Real Madrid. 3-2 winners over Inter. We'll talk about that. Sergio Ramos playing a part in that one for the Madristas, Benzema in the 25th, Ramos in the 33rd. And, of course, the third goal was scored by Rodrigo. Martinez and Perisic for Real Madrid. So Zinedine Zidane saying after this, quote, things are always tense because there's a tough opponent in front of you. We suffered, but we need to pat our boys on the back because they deserve to win. We started really well, pressing high as we'd like to. We went up 2-0, but we conceded quickly, couldn't play our football. That from Zidane. Manchester City, 3-0 over Olympiakos of Greece, Torres, Jesus, or Jesus, and Cancelo in the 90th. 3-0 over Olympiakos, team that I played against once in my pro career in New York. Porto, 3-0 over Marseille. And in that one, the Portuguese squad putting a beat down on the French squad. Michelin went down 2-1 to Ajax and Atalanta. Wow. 5-0 beat down by Liverpool. Jota with the hat trick. 16th, 33rd, 54th. Salah in the 47th and Mane in the 49th. That's pretty crazy. It was 5-0 after 50 minutes. And Atalanta is a team that has actually last year went pretty deep in the Champions League. So tomorrow we got Zenit and Lazio. Istanbul, Başakşehir against Manchester United. That one's in Turkey. Chelsea at home against Rennes. Sevilla and Krasnodar. Bruges and Dortmund. Barcelona will play Dynamo Kiev at the Camp Nou. Ferencváros of Hungary in Budapest against Juventus. And Red Bull Leipzig against Paris Saint-Germain. So that's what we got going on tomorrow in the Champions League. So a lot going on there. All right, so let's go to this. Dynamo were 3-0 losers, eliminated from the playoffs. We did that game on the radio. I hope people like that. If you have any comment about that, 713-780-3776. If you want English language radio, if you want to make a comment about the Dynamo season, the Champions League, please do it now in this first segment, 713-780-3776. Let's go to Todd Ramos, some sound after the elimination and loss to FC Dallas. Again, they did not answer the bell.
Well, I wanted to get some guys, I try to play with two wingers so that we could attack more. The idea was to come out and win the game. That's why I put Darwin inside, and I started with two wingers. I thought, you know, I was, you know, giving Wilfred an opportunity in the middle of the field to see if he can distribute some balls wide. That didn't happen. And I also thought that we would be able to have the ball a little bit more, and that didn't happen. And once I saw that we weren't getting a hold of the ball, then I decided to go back to a 4-3-3 that we're much more comfortable with. And I think at that point, we started to take more control of the game. We've had 9 ties, and I felt like 7 of those should have been wins. And once we didn't get those wins, eventually there's going to be games where you are not up to par. And the ones you're not up to par, you're normally going to lose. And we couldn't get over the hump in the games that we were really competitive in. That could have been, you know, it could have been another 8-10 points from where we are now. It would have made it a completely different season.
So that was Tab Ramos. We're going to have Adam Lundqvist coming on in this first hour. Tom Marshall coming up in the next segment. I want to go to a big day, though. It was a big day for Albert Delis. Got the start against Benfica. Benfica was second in the Portuguese table. It's a legendary club. And, of course, Boa Vista, well, they were 17th out of 18th. Albert Delis had a big day. He was mobile, played his starting role of a number 9. He was mobile, scored a fantastic goal. Here is Albert Delis on his goal in Portugal.
Boa Vista, man. Look at that, man. Angelito. This is Ellis. 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 Ellis is the second one for Boa Vista. And it's 2-0 down for the team from Porto. The Czech team is winning this game over the leaders of the tournament. You were not expecting this, Benfica. You are not ready for this version of Boa Vista, baby. What a goal.
Nos da mucha confianza, que es lo que necesitábamos. Y pues ahora mandamos un mensaje a toda la liga que nosotros podemos jugarle tú a tú a cualquier equipo.
So that was Albert Delis talking there. He said, quote, it gives us a lot of confidence, which is what we needed. And well, now we sent a message to the rest of the league that we can play punch for punch with any team. So it was wonderful to see that from Albert Delis. And I know there were some people in Houston who did watch that game. And all of a sudden now we have interest in the Portuguese league in Boa Vista because we wanted to see Albert Delis produce over there. And by the way, he did the Panther crawl, the whole thing. It was awesome. He also played a part in the build-up to one of the other goals, 3-0 over Benfica. That is a huge win. That turned a lot of heads in Portugal. So good for La Pantarita, Albert Delis, on what was a monumental day for him. He's wanted that move to Europe. He finally got it. And, you know, you really have to like that storyline. Now, Reggie Cannon, also of FC Dallas, he played the full 90 minutes in that one as the right back as well. So, you know, there's a real MLS input into Boa Vista in Portugal, and this can be quite the stepping stone for, you know, players when they get to Europe. So here we go. Let's talk a little bit about the U.S. men's national team roster. Three goalkeepers, Ethan Horvath, who plays for Bruges, Odunze, who plays for Leicester City, Zach Steffen, who plays for Manchester City, has 17 U.S. caps. So it's a roster that's interesting. Average age is 21 years, 300 days. Defenders, John Brooks, one of the more experienced guys with 38 caps. Reggie Cannon with 10. Serginho Dest with 3 caps for the U.S. Matt Miazga of Anderlecht, 18 caps. Tim Ream, Fulham, 40. I believe he's the most experienced player on the squad with 40 caps. Chris Richards, yet to be capped, uncapped. Anthony Robinson, Fulham, 7 caps. Tyler Adams of RB Leipzig. Johnny Cardoso, who's uncapped, international in Brazil from New Jersey. We'll talk about him with Brian Chiaretta. Richard Ledesma, PSV Eindhoven, Netherlands, uncapped. Weston McKennie, Juventus, 19 caps. Yunus Musa, this is an interesting 17-year-old, playing for Valencia, uncapped. He's not fully committed to the U.S. yet because these are friendlies, but has real interest in being here. And then this was one that Paul LePage, if you remember, from Houston Wolves, tipped us off on. Paul LePage told me about a guy named Owen Otasowi of Wolverhampton. Has not played a lot for the first team. Told us about him. He's in the squad as well. Forwards, Conrad De La Fuente has not yet played in an official Premier League game. I mean, excuse me, La Liga game for Barcelona. Gioacchini, Nicolas Gioacchini, playing in France in a lower division. He's in a fight to get that team promoted, so he's getting a lot of regular minutes. Pulisic, Yuli Yanez of Heerenveen, Gio Reyna, 17 years old, looking for his first cap. Josh Sargent, playing on Werder Bremen. You know, as a forward, you don't get a lot of chances there. His 13th cap, he's got 5 U.S. goals. And Sebastian Soto of Telstar in the Netherlands lower division. Now, Tim Weah gets called in. He's not playing for Lille. He's not even on the bench, I don't think, half the time. So there's a lot of interesting things here. Number one, there's some people getting picked here because of COVID. No question. No question. Because you're not going to be able to dip into the MLS teams. So you are picking some guys that are based in Europe, you know, that they're going to get some opportunity now because of the COVID-19. And that's not to say they don't deserve it, but I just think it opens a window. Guys like Johnny Cardoso, he's coming from Brazil, actually. But Yunus Musa, Otasowi from the Wolves, Gioacchini, some of these guys that have yet to get capped yet. And we don't really know a whole lot about, quite frankly. I can't tell you a lot about these guys. I have watched a little bit of Johnny Cardoso in Brazil on BN, I believe. But, yeah, it's interesting because if you look at Major League Soccer, you're going to go right to a bunch of guys that you think would normally be there, right? Yeah, Jozy Altidore, Jordan Morris are guys that right away you would think, you know, would obviously be with the U.S. national team. Eric Williamson in Portland is one I think would be there. Brendan Aaronson, Philadelphia Union, also in Portland. Jeremy Abobasi. These are guys that you would have thought would have gotten called up here. So the look at this roster is very interesting. There's experience with the biggest clubs in Europe, with people starting and regulars. And then you go all the way to the other end of the spectrum here with guys that are really on the fringes, have never played for a first team yet, but are, you know, on the books at these big clubs that makes you led to believe here that this is some assessment also and getting to know you from the manager, Greg Berhalter. So You have to like this, though, because from the big picture here, it's just amazing to see how many American players, you know, or with American ties that are connected with clubs like Werder Bremen, with Dortmund, with Chelsea, with Barcelona, with Juventus, with Internacional in Brazil, which is a huge club, with PSV Eindhoven, with Valencia, with Wolfsburg, with Boavista, with Anderlecht, with Bayern Munich. It's Manchester City, Zach Steffen. It's pretty remarkable. But I would just say, proceed with caution and don't blow people up too fast. We know who the bona fide ones are so far because simply they are playing and getting minutes with some of the bigger clubs in the world. So the takeaway is the amount of players now playing in Europe on this roster, the average age 21 and 300 days. It's a roster that, again, as I mentioned, goes to all ends of the spectrum. Bona fide starters, others that are not well known that are trying to fight their way in name clubs. 14 players selected here are U23 eligible for Greg Berhalter. It's another thing to focus on. 10 players are uncapped, including Gio Reyna, Yunus Musa, Conrad De La Fuente, Chris Richards, Johnny Cardoso, a number of them, uncapped. They are going to play against Wales November 12th in Swansea. Now, a little side note to that, Ryan Giggs was arrested in Manchester on suspicion of assault. Giggs is the manager of Wales. He's not going to be available for that game. That's kind of disturbing. So that is November 12th against Wales, and then the U.S. will play against Panama on November 16th, CONCACAF competition in Austria. There will be nobody at these matches. It's a third visit for the United States to Austria. And the first time the U.S. will play a CONCACAF opponent at a neutral venue outside of our region of the world. So that's kind of interesting. It'll be played south of Vienna, 40 miles south in the Wiener Neustadt Stadium. And that's the site where Mexico will play the Korea Republic 2 days before the U.S. plays Panama. Mexico will also play Japan as well. So no fans in the stadium. There'll be a lot of protocol. And the U.S. will finally get some games against Wales and Panama. So that's a good thing for them because Mexico's been picking off some very good competitive games. All right, we're going to take a break. We're going to come back. Speaking of Mexico, we're going to talk with Tom Marshall now. Again, we remind you, big thank you to John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com. They're going to work for you 24-7 nights and weekends. They're going to give you a personalized approach. John and his firm, 713-322-HURT. Presenting sponsors of Soccer Matters here on ESPN 97.5. Also last night in Austin, Texas. Good show last night. Angela Kelly, the Texas coach, talked a little NCAA women's soccer. They're going to play in the spring as well. Some excitement around that. I've got some NCAA news as well from Sasha Sirovsky of Maryland. And, big exciting news there. Also, big thank you to Jan Christensen, Danish Inspiration's Timeless Contemporary Furniture, who helped us put on the Dynamo FC Dallas match this weekend, along with Soccer Matters. Soccer Matters production, but right there with us was Danish Inspiration's Timeless Contemporary Furniture. Get over there. Get into one of the stressless recliners. Big story around that, getting that game on the air. I'm not going to tell it tonight, but maybe next week. Next week, I think we're going to do the deeper dive on the Dynamo roster, you know, the 14 players that are out of contract. Try to get on President John Walker. Try to get on Tom Ramos, the head coach. And try to get on General Manager Matt Jordan so we can get a look out into the vision of the future of sort of what comes and what is happening with the competitive side and also with the team off the field. So I think next week a deeper dive. Apparently there's going to be a rebrand in November as well. We'll take a break. We'll come back. The great Tom Marshall will join us. And by the way, Albert Elis in that game was voted the man of the match for his first goal with Boavista in a 3-0 win over Benfica.
This is ESPN 97.5.
Ah. I'm Tyler Adams, and you are listening to Soccer Matters with Glenn Davis on ESPN 97.5.
Well, Tyler Adams is Red Bull Leipzig in action tomorrow in the Champions League. Fun games today. There'll be more games tomorrow. It seems like we have more football than we can ask for these days. Quick word here right now for our good friends at Lustau Vermouth. Get a little Lustau into your life. It's a Spanish vermouth. You do it over ice with either club soda or tonic. You break a little orange peel in there. It's absolutely wonderful in a gin and tonic as well. Lustau Vermouth. As we welcome you back to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5, presented by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. One of the great guests on this show that regularly brings us great stuff. He is Tom Marshall, ESPN FC. You can also catch him on Twitter, at Mexico World Cup. And he also does the Mexican Soccer Podcast Show. So big thanks to Tom. Tom, how are you?
Yeah, go ahead. Not bad, thanks. Yeah, just here in Guadalajara and gearing up for the international break and then the playoffs in Liga MX. So plenty to close out the year with in terms of Mexican soccer.
Well, I just want to remind my listeners, if you want to be up on Liga MX, the Mexican national team, it is Tom Marshall. So, Tom, I want to go right to Tecatito Corona, who's playing for Porto. Everybody loves the football this guy has been playing lately. Is he going to move from Porto in the future? I mean, what's kind of the buzz around that? Because he has been a mainstay there. You would think the natural progression is now from him to jump from Porto to a bigger club in Europe.
Yeah, 100%. And I think that was his plan. You know, I spoke to people close to him actually in the off season to kind of do some digging about what was going on, and basically, you know, there's interest there. I just think because of the COVID-19 situation, there was, you know, the market was obviously a lot slower than it has been previously, and I think probably without that, he would have moved on. I think the other thing as well is Porto are obviously, you know, in the Champions League and with a good victory today. And I think Porto looked at the group and they've got, you know, Olympiacos from Greece, Olympic Marseille and Manchester City. And I think Porto as well kind of said, look, we can get through this group, and everybody knows if you can get through a group into the knockout stages of the Champions League, it's big money. And I think Porto kind of just said, look, we're not going to reduce the price of this player. I think they're wanting 30 million euros. And I think they said, right, we need him. He's the best player. He was the MVP in the Portuguese league last season. And so we need him for the Champions League. And then let's hope he carries on his form and then sell him some more after. And so far, I think he's going to be on the radar for clubs come the winter and especially next summer.
Yeah, still in the shop window right now. Nothing like being in the Champions League and playing well there, right?
Yeah, no, exactly, yeah. Yeah, and he's been doing it for a while now. I think he's a player that he's always, even since he was like 19, 20, he's always been a little bit special. He does things that other players can't do. He beats defenders. I think what he's added to his game now over the last kind of probably 18 months, 2 years, is there's a level of consistency now. He's doing it week in, week out, and he's impacting games. And, I think from the Mexican national team point of view, you know, it's really exciting right now. I think you're seeing Irving Lozano finally come out his shell a little bit over at Napoli. You've got Raul Jimenez, who's just an absolute sensation in the Premier League, and then you've got Tecatito Corona. So you've got, you know, three forwards, and we know on the US side there's a lot of excitement, but on the Mexican side there's, you know, having those three players all together on the field at the same time. There's not too many national teams in the world that can boast a front three as good as those.
So let's. You brought up a great point there. Let's talk about this, Tom. We're talking to Tom Marshall. So the U.S. put a roster out today that is pretty expansive. It's all pretty much European players except for one player that's playing in Brazil. And you know, it goes from the Christian Pulisics, the Weston McKennies, the guys that are playing at big clubs and actually are regulars, Gio Reyna. To guys that are, you know, on the books at name clubs that are trying to break in and haven't played for the first team yet. But as much as the U.S. and Mexico are always looking at each other, is there a reaction in Mexico now to the amount of Americans that are now connected to larger name clubs in Europe?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, it's absolutely, you know, going over the media even today after the U.S., you know, the U.S. men's national team released the squad. It's kind of like you go through the names of the clubs, the Borussia Dortmund, you know, the Chelsea's, the Barcelona, you know, on and on. Juventus, these massive, massive clubs. And I think, you know, there's been a theory in Mexico for quite a while now. And I think Juan Carlos Osorio, the former manager, he was kind of very, very vocal in saying, look, the Mexican national team is going to be able to jump to that elite level when it has more players playing in elite clubs, in elite leagues. And you know, you look at what the U.S. men's national team doing, and that's exactly what kind of Osorio was saying. And I think, yeah, there is a bit of, you know, nervousness, I think, from the Mexican side. I think there's also a kind of, you know, a counter argument that, not a counter argument, but just the kind of, you know, Tata Martino said it as well. He said, look, we can't deny that the U.S. has got some really good players, really good young players coming through. He also said, like, you know, with top of CONCACAF right now, with the Gold Cup, you know, with the gold holders of the Gold Cup, the U.S. didn't even make the World Cup last time around, and you know, we're, you know, Mexico, if you look at, you know, they're 11th in the world right now in the FIFA rankings, and I think there's a feeling within Mexico that if things go well between now and Qatar, Mexico can get up into the top 7. The rankings are actually worked out differently this time around. So there's a possibility if Mexico do well between now and Qatar 2022, then they're going to be one of the ranked teams. So Mexico, yeah, it's a concern about the States and what's going on. But it's also like Mexico's looking up, you know what I mean? And up is the top 10 in the world. And I think that, you know, both those things are true, if you know what I mean.
So Mexico will play the Korea Republic. They also have a match against Japan. You expecting a very similar roster to the last one?
Yeah, I think pretty much. I think Irving Lozano is going to be coming back. Guillermo Ochoa as well from injury. You know, I think Tata Martino's kind of working out his squad now. And I think what's going to happen is that, you know, after the Olympic Games next summer, I think that's when we're going to see, you know, how far along some of the younger players are. You know, the Roberto Alvarados, the Gerardo Arteaga, you know, even players like Cesar Montes, and to see how much he wants to kind of depend on them and kind of wants to ease out those kind of more established names that we've grown to know over the last few years. So I think that's going to be the key time for Mexico. And yeah, I mean, the other thing though, Glenn, is like, you know, I was reading what's going on in Austria the other day, and it, you know, there's a lockdown there as well. And I think there's still a kind of little bit of concern whether those games are going to go ahead, bearing in mind that, yeah, you know, you've got players from all around Europe, you've got players traveling from Mexico, and then the big question mark is if they're going to travel from the MLS as well, you know, which would mean that obviously if they're in the playoffs, then they'd have to quarantine on return, and you know, that's not good at all for the club teams.
Crazy challenging. I did see one of your tweets earlier that said the Mexican president had spoken on TUDN and mentioned that the games are still on, but there is a lockdown in Austria, and the next couple of days are vital to see whether this goes ahead or not. Okay, I want to take you into Javier Chicharito Hernandez. I made a real mistake and watched this YouTube video of this thing he's been doing.
Oh, no.
I'm simply going to say to you, this is not a guy that's prioritizing professional soccer right now. And I found it really sad, actually. How about some thoughts on that for us? Because we've had a lot of people weighing in on Chicharito. Doesn't even look fit as a professional athlete, and people are beginning to wonder if he even cares.
Yes, I mean, the amount of criticism that he's been getting in Mexico is unbelievable, to be honest. And it goes along that kind of line. It's like the priority just isn't there. He's kind of, you know, he's lost the love of the game. He's been influenced by, you know, some of the people that you see on that video on his YouTube
Tom,
video.
Tom, hold on one second. Can I say one thing? If you want to be criticized and vilified, then you do a video like he did. This is what just is mind-blowing to me. This is a guy that has played for Manchester United, has scored a boatload of goals for Mexico, was a national idol, What prompts somebody to do this?
I mean, yeah. I mean, there's all sorts of theories out there. He's got two young kids as well. But you know, I don't know. One of the theories is that he kind of never really had that kind of adolescence because he was kind of he was obviously working his way up, playing. He was super professional at that point, and then all of a sudden, you know, now he's kind of at the tail end of his career, and he's just kind of letting his hair down and doing whatever he wants. But I think that's the accusation, is that, you know, he's more concerned with playing his computer games and doing his his YouTube videos than he is about what's going on the field. And you know, you just can't get away with that these days.
You can't have it both ways. You can't take $6 million. It's very disrespectful to the LA Galaxy. You can't take $6 million a year and do that. If you want to do that, then just retire. I mean, he's obviously got enough money.
Yeah, 100%. And you know, that's, I think, coming next year, because it doesn't look like the Galaxy are going to make the playoffs. We'll see. But you know, he's going to have played 10 games in 12 months for the team, and it's just, I don't know, it's just not good enough. Scored one goal. I think I was looking, he's only had 4 shots on target over those games he's played, like over 600 minutes. So he's not performing, and I don't know. There's a big question mark now, because when you look at kind of the historic Mexican players, you know, Chicharito would probably be right in there at number three, but you know, behind Hugo Sanchez and Rafa Márquez. But the way things are going, I don't know. He's just kind of tainting his kind of legacy a little bit. You know, he needs to get his head back onto playing, and if he does that, still, he's only what, 32. He can still score plenty of goals in MLS, but it does really seem like he, I don't know. And to be honest, Glenn, you know, I've been around the national scene for quite a long time. This isn't something that's new either. This has been going on a few years. Whereas, you know, you hear those rumors or you hear little bits of information from inside the camp that, you know, the guy's head's not, you know, he wants a bit of differential treatment. He's, you know, I don't know, he's just not willing to do certain things like the rest of the players are, the commercial stuff, you know, everything that comes with being a star of the national team. So I'm sure he's got his own kind of argument as well. You know, he was the face of the Mexican national team for so long. But I'll tell you what, Glenn, luckily for Mexico, Raul Jimenez has kind of just absolutely taken the baton and just ran off into the distance with it now, in terms of, you know, who's going to score the goals for the national team.
Yeah, no comparison. It's just so disappointing to me, because, you know, I was calling the game the night Manchester United came to Houston, and I mean, half of Energy Stadium was there to see, yeah, certainly Manchester United, but you could have sworn that 50% of the people were there to see Javier Chicharito Hernandez. It's just so disappointing to me. So on that same thing, could the LA Galaxy potentially go get a Mexican manager? I mean, you know, I heard Herrera, per one of your tweets, came out and said that, you know, he hasn't had any contact with the Galaxy. I think Javier Aguirre is throwing his name in the hat. Could that be part of the plan? Get a Mexican manager that can get him in line, or is it basically is it time to part ways with Chicharito?
No, I mean, I don't think they can part ways with him just after one season. I think they have to just be kind of really hoping that next year he comes back with just a fresh attitude. He comes back fit, you know, and he's raring to go. Yeah, in terms of the managers, I mean, you know, I think Miguel Herrera, I think he's regularly linked with MLS. You know, he signed a new 4-year deal with Club America back in June. He said that if he leaves America, it's going to be for Europe or the national team. He's never kind of criticised MLS too much, but I don't know, I'd be surprised, unless there's a massive financial offer, which the Galaxy could do. I would be surprised in that case. I think the ones that make sense, Javier Aguirre, I think he's just that experienced, steady hand that, I think, you know, he speaks English, obviously speaks Spanish. He's been there, done it. The kind of those allegations about match fixing and stuff are kind of behind him now. And I think that one does make a lot of sense to me. And he's desperate to come to MLS. I mean, he says it regularly. And I think the other one is Juan Carlos Osorio, who's just left Atlético Nacional in Colombia. You know, he's going to be looking for work. Again, speaks English and Spanish. Former Mexican national team manager, he's going to split opinions, because, you know, we talk many times now, Glenn, about how he split the opinions in Mexico. But I think key with Osorio is he got on really well with Dennis Di Crossi, the Galaxy GM. Those two were really close. Dennis carried out a lot of the kind of plans that Osorio had in terms of they really prepared well for the Russian World Cup. In terms of everything towards, you know, the nutrition, the mattresses were shipped in from Western Europe in terms of where the players actually slept. I mean, you know, it was unbelievable the effort that went into Mexico doing well at that World Cup. And I think that was because Osorio works really well in part with Dennis Di Glossi, and I think they maintained a good relationship.
I remember interviewing Juan Carlos Osorio, who was also a part of the college game in the United States when he was with the Red Bulls. And, I mean, he went on for 45, 50 minutes. I mean, he just wanted to talk tactics. It was pretty remarkable. Okay, who's next for Major League Soccer? Miguel Layun, Hector Moreno. What about Vincent Janssen? Or what about Funes Mori? Are we going to get some big name Liga MX players coming?
Yeah, I mean, I think we're going to see that trend continue. You know, I think Vincent Janssen, I mean, he's just not playing. He's just not started enough games, and he didn't come to Mexico to be on the bench. I think Funes Mori is one that isn't going to happen because he's in the process now of becoming a Mexican citizen, and I'm pretty sure that in the course of, you know, well, next year in 2021, you know, I'd put money on him playing for the Mexican national team. You know, Tata Martino has already reached out to his agent about potentially playing. Obviously, he's going to have to fight for his place. But yeah, and I think the other thing, though, Glenn, I mean, I think Miguel Layun as well would be a good fit for a lot of clubs. He's a guy, you know, similar to Chicharito. He's out there, he's doing his thing. You know, he's out there in the media, he's on the social networks, but he's also kind of seems to be a lot more centred, you know. And I think he'd be a good fit for a lot of MLS teams. And I think the other thing is, it's those younger players again, Glenn. I don't think it's necessarily those older Mexican national team players these days. I think it's some of the younger players, even like, you know, an Orbelín Pineda, who's had, you know, he's 24 years old, he's had time with the Mexican national team. You know, and I'm just trying to think of a couple of other names, but, you know, Jesús Gallardo from Monterrey. I mean, these players who are in the prime and can obviously, not just the Mexicans, and they can be marketed well up there, but they can bring a lot to the team as well. So, yeah, I think it's gonna continue the back and forth, and, you know, we'll see if the Mexican clubs look up there as well, because, you know, they should be looking up there given that there are quite a few players making less money than they would here in Mexico. So it's I think it's going to be another interesting kind of 12 months from the back and forth between Liga MX and MLS.
Tom, as always, thank you so much. Let's hope if Miguel Layun is doing a YouTube show, it's better than Chicharito's. Let's just say that. Right? Tom, it's always a pleasure. Love having you on. Hope the little baby's doing well. Stay safe. Until the next time we have you on, thanks so much for joining us tonight.
Thanks very much, Glenn. Stay safe, and, you know, a shout-out to all the listeners. Thanks a lot.
Yep. They know you well, Tom, believe me. That's at Mexico World Cup on Twitter, and also, of course, you can catch Tom Marshall on the Mexican Soccer Show podcast, sharp as a whip. Absolutely love having him on. All right, so here's In Excess as we go to break. When we come back, Adam Lundquist, Houston Dynamo. We're going to get real with Adam. We're going to talk about what's been the struggles this year, what's the future look like, some of the good things. Adam, a good man for coming on. Adam Lundquist, Houston Dynamo, next.
Years of research and innovation.
Innovation Map is the new voice of innovation in Houston.
Pretty cool, huh, Morty?
Covering startups, tech, energy, health, social impact, and more. Visit innovationmap.com today.
Do it now! Do it! Do it! Do it now!
Hi, this is Oliver Luck, and you're listening to Soccer Matters on 97.5 with the irrepressible Glenn Davis.
One of my favorite Clash songs, believe it or not, this is the Clash. They had some reggae influence. It's called Living in Fame. Such a great song. All right, let's go to Houston Dynamo. He's the left back, has played in the Olympics for Sweden, has represented Sweden in other internationals, and he's the incumbent at the left back position for the Houston Dynamo. It's Adam Lundqvist. Adam, thank you for coming on tonight.
Thank you for having me.
Adam, I'm going to tell you this up front. I appreciate you coming out and talking, because a lot of people don't necessarily want to talk when things don't go their way, and it's been a difficult season for you guys. Just, I would just give you the platform right off the top here to tell us where it's at right now with you and the rest of your team.
No, but I think you said it. It's been a really hard season for us. Obviously, there's no way around it. What you got to do is, like you say, it's not a time that you have to point fingers at someone or something. I know it's been a hard year, but it's been a hard year for everyone with everything that's going on in the world. And everyone has needed to adapt and try to find a new normal and try to adapt to that. And we, as a team and as a club, hasn't really done a good job performance-wise, doing our job the best way we can. We need to do better. Like that's the only way to put it. And like I said, this is no time to point fingers at each other. The only one you can point fingers at is yourself, and you have to look yourself in the mirror. And I mean, just be a self-critic and know what you need to change and change it, because I've said this before, like this city is about winning. We want to give the fans what they deserve, and I can only really speak for myself, but I know I also speak for a lot of my teammates when I say that we're also disappointed. We feel your disappointment, and we really just want to fix it. And yeah, like I said before too, is that the night is always the most dark before the dawn. So I mean, the good times are coming, and I know with this mentality in this city, what we have with our fans, we have everything we need to change it. So like I said, just moving forward from now on, that's the key.
He's Adam Lundqvist joining us tonight. Now, so I had an interesting conversation the other day with somebody, and we were talking about the team and the slow starts and how much pressure is on athletes like yourself when you're playing from behind. And one of the things I looked at was, you know, it always seems like everybody just gets along so well during the games. Like, I don't see anybody getting in somebody's face, maybe shouting at somebody. And I'm not talking about stuff that's divisive. I'm talking about stuff that is needed, because we all need a kick up the backside sometimes in games. Maybe it's a guy who doesn't track back defensively or loses concentration on a corner. It just seems like you guys get along just too nicely.
I don't know if there was a question. I can just say that.
Kind of a statement, I guess, but it's kind of a question too.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. I mean, there's in football or in soccer, like you have to have some kind of accountability, and it's important for a successful team to be successful. And like you say, I think you have a point there. Like, we haven't really had that little edge. I think we have it within ourselves. It's just been, like you say, it's a big mental thing for me. For me, it's about the winning mentality, about being able to switch on from the start of the game and not chase a game like I feel like we have been doing most of the year. Like, we always come out slow out the blocks and always kind of have to go chasing the game from behind. And that is something that is not ideal. For me, it's like I said, it's a mental thing. We need to be better, to hold ourselves accountable and know what's required of us and do our jobs, and also not be afraid to let anyone in your, like any one of your teammates, know that they're not doing their job.
And so today,
that's it.
No, I was just going to say, today I heard Roy Keane, the former Manchester United midfielder, came out, and they were talking about it, being prepared, motivated from the start of a game. And he said, he totally went against it. He said, quote, "I never looked at the manager for motivation. It's got to be in your DNA." And you kind of sit there and you think, you go, yeah, do you really need an emotional message from your manager to lift you game in and game out? Because this was a problem for you guys. I mean, I felt bad for you guys having to constantly fight with all this energy to get back in games. And you did prove that you could come back and get into games, but it's not the way you're going to make the playoffs in MLS. It's tough.
Yeah, yeah. And I feel also like that's a very valid point. Like, if you ask me, I've always been a very competitive guy. I hate to lose. When I was young, I would, maybe this is a little embarrassing to admit, but I would cry when I was losing when I was little, and that's how I'm driven. And like I said, I have never really, either when you think about it, looked for the motivation from a coach. The coach's job for me is about setting like a frame for our game. And it's up to us players to paint the picture, you know. And I feel like the motivation has to come from yourself. It has to be there. And I think it's in every player who plays professionally, because without that fire or without that, like, the little extra competition spirit, if you don't have it, I don't think you would have made it this far. The only thing is that you can't forget where it is, and you have to dig deep to find it. Some players have to dig deeper, but some people, like some players, it comes more natural. I think that's the thing. We need to get back to when you were young, when you were playing with this kind of a little, you were playing for, like, you had nothing to lose, you know? And I mean, that's how I see it. That's how I try to go into every game. For me, every game is a matter of almost life and death to me. Like, you can ask anyone I know, anyone in my family or anyone in my wife. When I come home and we play bad or we lost, you don't really want to talk to me, because I will be all up in my head and I'll be angry and I'll be saying all kinds of stupid things. But that's because I always want to win. I always have this fire in me, and I think I've seen it in trainings. We have it too. It's just that people kind of forget it on the way, and we just have to dig deep and find it, because it's so important. And that's how you win games.
Talking to Dynamo left back Adam Lundqvist, has been a regular there all year long, up and down the left side, and really appreciate you stepping out. Look, professional sports is a job. It's your job at the end of the day. Job security. Is there nervousness now amongst the players? Because there are 14 players that are out of contract December 31st. Do you get that sense now that there are people thinking about their futures a little bit more now that you're out of the playoffs?
I mean, I haven't really thought about it that much. Inevitably, that when the season is ending, you know, if you've been in this league, you know that that's usually the case, that it's going to be a lot of back, like, players is going to move. And in MLS especially, it's a really different league when it comes to that, because a lot of players can switch back and forth between teams, and it's very easy to build a team with, like, within a year. And you know, you don't know how many of the guys I go into the locker room today that I'm going to see next year. So you definitely feel it, like, that kind, you know, is that time of the year. But I think, like you say, what our jobs requires right now is that we have one last game, and that game needs to be all out, because we don't want to end this season in a bad note. We want to finish on a good note, and I feel like we really have every possibility to do it. We want to show that we're a good team. We want to show that this year has been a crazy year, and this is not a regular thing. This is a slump. We're going to get out of it, and we want to start on Sunday. So, I mean, like you say, that's what I had to say about it. I mean, at this time of year, inevitably, there's going to be a lot of contracts just expiring and all that stuff, but if you're still under contract, the season is still underway. It's not finished yet. You have to finish your job. You have to do what's required of you and go on Sunday and finish well for the fans and for the club.
Adam, I got to tell you, I really appreciate you getting real with my listeners tonight and having a real interview about what it is to be a professional soccer player and the things that have gone on during the season. And I want to thank you for that, because not everybody would step up. I like that. I think this becomes a very healthy interview for the fans to hear you in this way talking about the season. And look, we also know it's a new system under Tab Ramos. There were a lot of positives, I think, also from playing style standpoint and understanding and learning the 4-3-3. I mean, I think there's a lot of different things going on. So it is reality, not in the playoffs. But on the other hand, just you coming up and really talking honestly is a big deal to me and I think to our listeners as well, and very, very healthy. So thank you very much for that.
Yeah, thank you. I really appreciate you having me and letting me speak about this, because I also feel it's important. So thank you.
Oh, you're going to get a lot of people saying that was wonderful, wonderful integrity and just being real upfront from Adam Lundquist. And for that, again, I want to tell you thank you. That is healthy stuff. Thank you, Adam Lundquist. And you get a break tonight.
Thank you.
And we will bring you back on the show again real soon, I hope.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
All right. That's Houston Dynamo left back Adam Lundquist there. Great stuff from him. Look, it's always easy to talk when things are flowing well, right? When things aren't as good, you see who rises to the top. Those are the ones you see that get out in front. And appreciate Adam coming on. Elfsborg in Sweden. Remember, he went away as a young man from his home to pursue professional soccer. All right, we're going to take you to break with some Uriah Heep. Maradona right now probably in surgery. That per his nephew, Diego Lopez Maradona, who lives in Houston, who played for the old Houston Hotshots. We'll take a break here. Soccer Matters, ESPN 97.5, presented by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. We roll on. Next up, Tom Clare talking dementia and some of the legendary footballers in England who may be just forgotten.
ESPN 97.5.